Welcome back to the DFS Office Hours podcast. My name is Jordan, I'm the head coach at SaberSim, and this episode is a recording of an interview originally streamed live on YouTube on October 14th, 2021 with SaberSim partner Max Steinberg, walking through the four keys you need to know to be successful playing NBA DFS. These strategy-focused interview streams help us break up the typical DFS Q&A style shows, and you can typically expect to see them posted at the start of new sports seasons, but we'll mix them in at other times throughout the year as well. I hope you enjoy. Daily fantasy basketball is getting tougher and tougher in 2021. To be successful in NBA DFS, not only do you need accurate projections that update quickly to the news that is breaking constantly in the NBA world, but you also need an optimizer that can deal with the complicated NBA correlations, handle ownership correctly in a sport where sometimes it's worth playing chalk players even when they're 50% plus owned, and embrace the variance and the ranges of outcomes of players to build lineups with real upside. My name is Jordan. I'm joined again here by Max. Welcome, Max. And today we're going to be showing you guys the four keys to beating daily fantasy NBA. But before we go ahead and jump into these four keys, we have to cover the most expensive mistake players of all skill levels make, and that is that they don't play the right contest. So this is our rule or key number zero here. People spend all their time on their lineups and dialing in their exposures and working on roster construction, whether they're using an optimizer or building by hand, but then they put these lineups that they work so hard on in the hardest contest to beat. With the right contest, you can literally double your ROI for the same lineups. For a deep dive into these principles and this contest selection theories, watch our full video called How to Double Your NFL DFS ROI in 15 Minutes. I know that title sounds really clickbaity, but it is really true. And while we put this video together for NFL and for the start of the NFL season, the concepts in this video remain totally true for all sports, including NBA. I'll talk quickly about a few of the core ideas there. And really what it's going to come down to is focusing on the lowest buy-in contest, playing as many lineups as possible at the lowest buy-ins with the highest overall effective entrance. So when we say effective entrance, we are talking about the total number of lineups in a contest divided by the entry limit that any one person can play. It's essentially calculating how many unique people actually could fill this contest up if everybody in the contest was maxing it out. And the common question here, I know, is always, aren't those contests harder to win, right? That's inevitably going to send you down the path of playing probably bigger overall contests. And the whole idea here is that while there are more lineups in the contest, the lineups made by the most skilled players in the lobby, who are the ones playing practically every contest out there and maxing out practically every contest that they're playing, it makes the percentage of lineups that they're taking up in those contests smaller. Their impact of the skilled players in the contest is lower, which makes the contest softer. The other thing we recommend people do is if you have access to the contests that are $3 and under, to focus your action heavily on $3 and under contests. The reason why is people with $1 million or more in lifetime winnings on both DraftKings and FanDuel simply don't have access to those contests, and you're going to be playing against way softer fields. And finally, use a unique lineup in every contest you're playing to minimize variance. We actually talked about this in detail on yesterday's Office Hours, but the idea here is even though you're still going to face swings that come with the natural variance of DFS, you're going to lower your risk, you're going to lower the amount of time it takes to start realizing some of your expected value by playing as many unique lineups as possible in these contests. But let's go ahead and really start jumping into NBA DFS strategy. So the state of NBA DFS here in 2021, at this point, serious players are pretty much all using projections of some kind or another, including generally ownership projections when they're building NBA lineups. And to be completely honest, it's pretty easy to make a decent set of NBA projections, and a lot of what is out there is actually pretty good. Also, almost everybody now is using an optimizer to build lineups, which again, as we'll see with the importance of average projections in NBA, are going to lead you to building pretty solid NBA lineups right out of the gate. So where is the edge in all of this? Where are we going to find the edge? Where are we going to start making our edge? Where are we going to start making some money in NBA DFS? I'm going to pass it over to Max to kick us off with the first key here to NBA DFS strategy.
Yeah. So one way that NBA DFS differs from, let's say, MLB and NFL is in MLB and NFL, correlation can kind of save your lineup, right? Is in MLB, if you just kind of stack four players on one team, four players on another team, don't play a pitcher going against that stack, you're going to make an okay lineup, right? In NFL, same way. If you stack basically any QB besides the very worst ones with like a couple of receivers, maybe with the bring back, even if your projections aren't that good, if you're thinking about it right and thinking about upside and just making a decent line of construction, you can kind of be saved by not having the perfect projections or making the perfect lineup. But in NBA, you really need accurate projections. If you don't have them, you're kind of just drawing dead because correlations are not that strong and range of outcomes are actually fairly normally distributed. So, you know, in NBA, the range of outcomes kind of looks more like a bell curve. It's like their mean's kind of in the middle, the median's kind of in the middle, and then it sort of just looks like this, right? And in other sports, that's not the case, right? So the reason that this happens in NBA is because NBA players in DFS gain points in like really small chunks, right? In NFL, for example, a wide receiver can get like an 80-yard touchdown and they get all their points on one play. So there can be like wildly crazy ranges of outcomes with that. In baseball, someone can hit a home run, a grand slam, for example, and basically like outscore everyone else on the slate, right? And that's just one swing. In NBA, there's not those opportunities for that, right? The most you're going to get on a play is like a steal and a dunk. It's going to be like a few fantasy points. But basically what's going to happen is you're going to rack those up throughout the game and you can have really high fantasy point games because of that. So what does this all mean? This just means that in NBA, average projections are going to be pretty accurate. They're going to predict things pretty well. And so you're going to need good ones, right? And so I'm going to talk about what goes into accurate projections in a few minutes. But for now, let's just keep it as accurate projections are just crucial for NBA DFS. So let's get to key number two, Jordan. Speed matters. I'm not talking about on the court. I'm talking about with your lineup builder, right? So when I say speed, I'm referring to how quickly your projections are going to accurately update with the changing news and how quickly it can update when news breaks, right? Starting lineups come out pretty late in NBA. In fact, sometimes they will come out just a few minutes before a game starts. And a lot of times big name players will just be late scratched or announced out with like 10 minutes to make a decision, right? And when this happens, it can give minutes and usage to backup players that suddenly will have a lot of opportunities to score, and these players will become the best value players of the slate, and it will completely change your lineup construction, right? So in general with NBA, you're going to get some really high value players because of the situation. And so it's generally going to be optimal to just get those players in your lineup. Fading them can be a huge mistake. So that being said, this is all your ability to actually like implement this is going to be all dependent on a projection system that's able to update quickly and accurately, and is going to be able to rebuild your lineups quickly as well. So like, imagine this, it's the Bucks are playing the Wizards, it's the highest game total of the night, and players from both teams are expected to be good and popular. This is a situation that almost certainly is going to happen at some point during the season, right? 10 minutes before lock, the Bucks roll out Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's going to have just an enormous impact on the slate. The Bucks starters are going to be tremendous plays. The bench player that's taking Giannis' spot is going to be a great value. And maybe Wizards are going to be a better place too, right? Because their defense is going to maybe take a hit, the Bucks defense, and also they have a better chance to stay close in the game. So when this news breaks, it's almost impossible to build profitable lineups if you haven't properly accounted for all of this and your projections have updated quickly and accurately. If they don't update, then it's sort of like up to you to sort of play around with it. And that's really, really hard, especially if you're not really, really experienced in NBA. And even if you are, it's just you, it's hard to even like start adjusting minutes here and here and figuring it all out. So if you have a system that is going to update really quickly and then is going to allow you to build Linus really quickly, that can be a huge, huge source of edge. So that speed matters a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of those things that is so uniquely MBA, a very specific thing that is just really important. If you've never jumped into the MBA DFS waters before, you will soon learn just how late some of this news breaks and how important it is to make those updates. But
yes, you'll learn this very quickly if you're not experienced in MBA. It happens a lot.
Yeah. So rule number three here, or key number three, I guess, is find the upside. And I know this is probably a pretty broad rule here, but this can show up really in a few different ways. And these are familiar concepts to folks that have watched some of our other videos. But there's really three ways that you can find upside in DFS. There's correlation, ownership, and accounting for the variance or the real ranges of outcomes of players. So starting with that first one, in NBA, correlation is still important, but the correlations are a lot weaker between individual players. So unlike in NFL or MLB or NHL, where players can have really significant positive and negative correlations to one another, in NBA, most correlations between any two players are fairly minor, and actually the correlations that end up do mattering a little bit more are negative correlations between players. And this tracks with our general intuition. If you've watched these sports, it's kind of difficult to come up with a game script where a wide receiver would have a ceiling game and catch three touchdowns for 180 yards without his QB having success as well. And we can just tell that there's a correlation there. But for example, in NBA, it's very easy to take LeBron James and Anthony Davis and write game scripts for the Lakers where they're both succeeding together, which would maybe indicate a positive correlation, or where one succeeds and the other fails. It's just hard to intuitively look at an NBA roster and know how NBA players are correlated. And that's not even taking into account the individual matchups or the specific game that's going on that night. So while these correlations between players are weaker in NBA DFS, it's still important to build lineups on the whole that account for these relationships. So again, I said, this isn't as simple in NBA as just saying, always stack a QB plus a wide receiver, or always force a five-man stack when you're playing baseball in DK. But despite the fact that these correlations between players are smaller, the more nuance between teams and players, and the more difficulty that it is for the average player to intuitively know what these correlations looks like, gives other DFS players more opportunities to make mistakes and can reward us more for dealing with NBA correlations correctly. In other words, in NFL, you can get a hugely positive correlation by stacking a quarterback plus a wide receiver. But since so much of the field already knows how to do this now in 2021, that relative edge you get can be a bit smaller and is probably shrinking every year. In NBA, the total correlation, total positive correlation in a even maximally correlated lineup might be small compared to NFL. But since the field doesn't know how to deal with these NBA correlations at all, the relative edge you're getting by making those correlations is much larger. So overall, one of the biggest things that we're actually going to see here, that valuing correlation in your NBA lineup construction process, is avoiding these big negative correlations, or even medium negative correlations, which is a concept that we'll return to here in a bit when we pull up the app and start talking through some of this stuff. But again, I just wanted to kind of iterate, you know, or really emphasize, I guess is a better word, the idea that people generally have a sense that correlations in NBA are a little bit lower, but you do get a little bit more relative edge from having some level of a focus on them because the field doesn't do that very well. So despite the fact that of that correlation be having smaller values between players means that you can get a greater relative edge focusing on other areas, and ownership is a big one there. So managing ownership and playing or fading the chalky players correctly is pretty crucial in NBA. And ownership is always important in DFS. We talk about it when we do strategy sessions for pretty much every sport that's kicking off, because we're not just trying to build the highest scoring possible lineup or the optimal lineup on any given slate. We're trying to beat all the other players playing in our contest. So players have a greater relative value the lower the percentage of lineups in the contest that roster that player. If you have a 50% owned player that has a ceiling game and you roster that player, you're just in the top 50th percentile in that contest. But if a 1% owned player has a ceiling game and you roster that player, you're immediately in the first percentile, right? But another reason why ownership is particularly important in NBA DFS is that the actual ownership of the best plays on any given slate can get extremely high, even on big 10, 11, 12 game slates. We just had the example of Giannis that Max was talking about before. In that particular situation, you're going to see ownership on guys like Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday just explode, be extremely high, even no matter how many games are on the slate. But where it really gets interesting is that a lot of times those plays that are that highly owned are actually really good plays, and it maybe even makes sense to be over the field on those kinds of ownership plays. The potential leverage you gain fading that chalk is a lot higher in NBA because we're talking about ownerships that are maybe 40, 50, 60%. But again, also because the chalk is a lot more reliable because accurate projections are more predictive, it's pretty hard to know what situations to play or fade the chalk. So a really intelligent approach to dealing with ownership is crucial to get an edge in NBA DFS. One particular example here is that extreme point per dollar values at these certain positions can create chalky plays at other positions purely because of the fact that they fit in from a salary and positional standpoint. So if, for example, throughout the day, news breaks that is opening up a ton of value at the guard positions and the chalkiest values and best projected plays on the slate overall are at guard, it's often likely that the expensive high salary players at the forward and center positions are going to become the chalkier stud plays, right? Where this can create some leverage is that while those value plays at guards are legitimately strong plays, they grade out really well point per dollar, the expensive higher salary stars that you might be playing at forward and center just because they fit into the lineup might start gaining a lot of steam and become a little bit over-owned compared to their expectation purely just because they fit easily into these lineups rather than those players actually having greater upside than other plays at their salary range. So we'll talk about what this looks like maybe in practice here in a bit, but you can find some leverage sometimes in NBA lineups just by shifting your roster construction from what the chalky overall construction might be. The last kind of final consideration of NBA DFS upside is at the individual player level, and we're talking about ranges of outcomes and variance here. So even though average projections can be a lot more useful in NBA than other sports to build strong lineups, ultimately, for GPPs, we're focused on upside. So low-salary players with solid projections and good point per dollars are often going to be prioritized by lineup optimizers. And again, I'm not really talking about the backup point guard that is minimum price and is going to play 36 minutes and has an 8 or 10 times his salary point projection here. That player is obviously a good play. But one of the examples that more I'm referring to is maybe the min-priced player that's projected to 15 to 18 points for a 5 to 6 times value. And traditional optimizers are going to like these players quite a bit. They'll be, you know, 5 to 6x value. And the traditional tools will also find it very easy to jam these players in to throw in a bunch of high salary stars in that lineup as well. But these plays can have very limited upside themselves and bring down the upside of the lineup overall. So it's important to build lineups that are constructed for upside and don't necessarily just jam in the best point per dollar plays. And again, in a few minutes, we'll talk about all the practical ways to do this, but just another thing to think about when you're talking about upside in NBA. So our final rule here, or key, I think we used key at the start of this, and now I keep saying rule, but it's late swap. You can't win in NBA DFS without late swap. And as again, we just discussed before, not only is news going to break right up against slate lock, but it's going to continue breaking throughout the slate. In NBA, it is really the perfect storm for requiring a ton of late swapping. The only players that are going to be locked into your lineups when lock passes at 7 p.m. Eastern time is the players playing in the 7 p.m. Eastern games. You can continue to edit these lineups just like you can in NFL and baseball and add and remove players in your lineups until their individual games start. But unlike NFL DFS, NBA slates are going to have games locking as many as 8 different start times on a single night for the biggest slates. You could have the 7 p.m., the 7:30, the 8, the 8:30, the 9, all these different start times on a single night. A bit like how baseball slates look, but unlike baseball DFS, where even having all of these different game start times, most of the teams, besides maybe just the teams playing on the West Coast, are going to have their starting lineups out before the game starts. In NBA, that's not the case. Teams are typically going to have their starting lineups out at best 30 minutes or an hour before game starts. And a lot of times it's a lot closer to the game start than that. So you are going to possibly be late swapping for every single, and probably we would encourage you to be late swapping for almost every single lock game start that is coming up, at least given that the starting lineups of the team have changed from what we expected. And again, with how impactful these surprise scratches and different starting lineups can actually be on the projections and how important those projections, the accuracy of those projections is, it makes late swap just absolutely crucial to do as the night goes on and the slate goes on and starting lineups continue to update. This is actually such an important part of NBA DFS strategy that we are going to tackle this topic in full in a different video. So we did the same thing for NFL. We had our NFL GPP strategy video and then later came back and talked about some NFL specific late swap concepts. We want to do the same thing here for NBA. So next week sometime we'll be doing an NBA strategy session totally based around late swap strategy. But we just wanted to stress here right off the bat, our first video, that this is a crucial strategy and concept for NBA.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add as well, I think that's what's sort of fun about NBA with late swap as well, is because lineup construction isn't as important as the thing, you can sort of just do late swap quite a bit and be kind of willy-nilly with it, and your lineups are going to look pretty similar. You're not going to like change the integrity of your lineups because there's not as much stuff like game stacking or player stacking as and things like that. And so you can just do this like basically every hour as the slate goes on, even if that there's not that much important information, and you can have a lot of fun with it. And especially if you're playing the contests that we're recommending, where there are these 20 max contests or even 150 max contests where you have to manage a lot of lineups, if you have a late swap tool, you're going to have a lot of edge on these guys who are doing 150 lineups or trying to do this and just can't do this easily. They have to do it by hand or do something else. That's really, really hard. It's basically impossible. And so you can get just a great edge if you have a good late swapping tool.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. No, that's really well said. And I mean, I think that's even, we'll talk about this again more in that strategy session, but I think even assuming that people are trying to do these late swaps and just doing them poorly is a bit generous. There's going to be a lot of people, especially at those lower stakes contests, those contests under $3 that aren't even going to try, when huge news breaks, that really significantly impacts maybe the late games in the slate or something like that. There's going to be a lot of people that just don't adjust. And that may be because they don't have the tools or they don't know how. So we'll talk about all of that and more in that strategy session, but it's a huge edge. So anyway, let's keep rolling here. And what I want to talk about next is, of course, why SaberSim is the best NBA DFS platform for dealing with the challenges of NBA. And our edge in NBA DFS comes from our complete game simulation. So we have an entire video dedicated to this important concept. I strongly recommend you check it out. A lot of you guys have already probably seen it before, but it's called DFS Lineup Optimizers Are Obsolete. You Need a Sim. And a link to that video will be in the description of this one. But for now, I'll just cover the core idea. And really, the ideas here is that our NBA simulations solve all of these four independent challenges of, or in, these four keys of NBA DFS. We have the best and most accurate NBA projections. Our projections for NBA are not just simple projections based on spreadsheets, just a single number. We are simulating out NBA games play by play thousands of times while keeping track of rotations, usage, pace of play, team and coach tendencies, and way more. Will, our full-time data scientist, has been working literally around the clock with Matt and our other back-end team members to get this simulator as accurate as possible for this season, and I have never been more excited for the start of an NBA season. We're planning on having those guys, Matt and Will, come on and talk in the coming weeks here about our NBA simulator, similar to how we've done for MLB and NFL. But for now, I can confidently say that we have the most accurate NBA projections in the industry, in a DFS sport that absolutely requires accurate projections like NBA, because nobody else is doing this. I know simulations is starting to become a little bit of a marketing gimmicky term in the DFS industry, but nobody's putting in this effort to do these play-by-play game simulations of a sport like NBA. But even better, we'll update quickly and accurately when news breaks. So when we get a new confirmed starting lineup or a player is ruled out, our simulator immediately and automatically is going to go to work re-simulating the game thousands of times again, play by play. And this allows us to understand the new texture of a game after huge news has broken, it only takes a few minutes to update. A lot of the traditional tools out there and average projections that you'll see are going to require people to go in and start manually tweaking usage numbers and minutes and do all this manual work when you have only 10 maybe precious minutes to get your lineups in after Giannis has been ruled out. Our simulator isn't going to have that trouble. The simulation will start and finish typically with just in a couple minutes and immediately now understand the new flow of the game.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize this too. I mean, I've been playing DFS for 7 years, something like that, and before SaberSim was even around. And when you don't get this update quickly and you literally have 15 minutes, it is so, so frustrating. This is something we're really emphasizing. And because we have more of an automated process than most other sites, we actually have a process that is going to handle this the quickest possible. And it doesn't need this human element that a lot of these projections have that can make a lot of mistakes, just like you can under pressure, right? So if we do this algorithmically and automated, it's going to help quite a bit with that speed.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a big push for us this year to really make sure that those sims are happening quickly and they're getting kicked off quickly after news breaks. So we're super excited about that. But again, the third key here was building lineups with upside, and our optimizer will do that. We'll pull the app up in a minute here and show you in detail how it works. But the reason why is because we have the only DFS, NFL, NBA DFS lineup optimizer that builds lineups by taking into account the correlations, ownership, and ranges of outcomes of players right out of the box. So if you want to build lineups with correlation with traditional tools, you're going to have to program dozens of rules and settings, and in NBA, particularly player groups, to get lineups with upside, because they were built to optimize everything around just average projections and ignore everything else that you have to think about when you're building DFS GPP lineups. We know what these precise correlations between players are on the basketball court, again, because we've simulated out the games and written all of the different possible game scripts and quantified these correlations in our game simulations. But our lineup builder knows exactly how much to weigh those correlation values, and we build lineups that have the right amount of correlation, that weight correlation accordingly, without having to set a single rule or create player groups or anything like that. On the ownership side, we leverage our ownership projections in a much deeper way than a simple ownership sum cap, which is a common rule you'll see out there, or a rule that requires you must build a lineup with a player that is under 10% or 5% owned. We actually compare the player ranges of outcomes to their ownership projection and then the average ownership projection at the position to decide what the good chalk and bad chalk is for you when we're building the lineup. The problem with something like an ownership sum cap is, well, one of the many problems is that it really doesn't make any distinctions between when a player is highly owned and is a good play and is highly owned and is a bad play. It just assumes that all ownership in particular, it may be all ownership is bad. And just like we mentioned before, in NBA, we can have these value plays open up that are 40, 50% owned that are basically must plays on the slate. And our builder understands that. Finally, our projections are deeper than just an average projection. So by simulating all these games out, we get an accurate look of a player's entire range of outcomes. And we'll look at what that looks like here in the app here in a minute. Even in a sport like NBA, where these players are normally distributed and their most common outcomes are concentrated around the average, understanding a player's real upside and the full range of outcomes is still crucial, because at the end of the day, it's going to be upside that wins you GPPs. It's not average performances. Last, but definitely not least, SaberSim has the most effective and efficient late swap tool. And literally with just a few clicks, you can update your projections to match the latest sims and rebuild your lineups with all of the power of the normal optimizer that I just mentioned to get the most up-to-date news incorporated into your lineups. I'm super excited to show you guys late swap again. We'll do that a little bit more next week when we have some slates to play with here. But for now, let's go ahead and put this all into practice with a build. So we'll show you how this all works. I'm going to go ahead and get the app pulled up here, and we will dive right in.
Okay. So as Jordan's getting that,
oops.
I guess he
sorry, I removed you instead.
That's all right. So Jordan just got the app pulled up. So this is going to look like, you know, we try to make this process as simple as possible, and it's uniform across the sports, right? There's step one, step two, and step three, right? This is step one of the sim building process, right? Reviewing your player pool. Basically, we're just looking at all the inputs of the system. This is team totals, this is player projections, this is player ownership, things like that. But some things that might be useful to take a look at here when you're building your lineups is one, and this is actually underrated importance, is when the projections last updated, right? So we have a little timestamp on the top right corner, and that's going to tell you when's the last time we updated anything. And that's going to be really important when big news breaks or just before a game start, because just check this timestamp to make sure, okay, are my projections fully updated for the things that have just happened? If they haven't, just keep clicking that refresh button on the top left until it does happen, right? You can also click on a player, right? You can click on a player. You can look at his range of outcomes. So this is going to show the player's full range of outcomes for that player's game simulations. You don't necessarily need to do this. And in fact, most players are going to be pretty normally distributed, but it's going to show us, you know, what some of the correlations might look like, maybe see something that shows us a little higher range of outcome. It's just a nice visual to look at. So we're going to cover, you know, a ton of ways you can add value to this process through the video in another video. I'm sorry, not this one, but let's just talk about an easy way to add value to this process. And I'd say the easiest way is just to look at minutes, right? So we give you the detailed projections of every player. And while it's pretty complex to make sort of an FP per minute projection or trying to figure out like how much this person's scored, like how many threes are they going to get? That's really complicated, right? Making a minutes projection is something that you actually can like change a little bit and add some value to, right? So something that's easy to do is first just identify the plays that are worth digging into, right? And so this is going to be probably value plays that are going to get into your lineup. And these are players who are going to be either high minute players with a low fantasy point projection or low minute players with a high fantasy point projection, right? So some examples on this 2-game slate that I identified was Kevin Looney. It's a high minute, low fantasy point per minute player. You can see that he's projected at, I think, 21 minutes and is at about 17 points. And then there's this guy, Nemanja Bjelica, I think is how you pronounce his name. He's pretty low minute, but he has a actually pretty decent fantasy point projection. So once you can identify these people, and also you could do a build and just try to figure out, okay, who am I getting and who do I want to look into? Are they a high minute or low minute player? Things like that. There's a lot of ways to identify this, right? But then what you can do is you can say, okay, let me look into this player, right? Let me see if I can find a coach's quote. You can just Google his name or look on Twitter. Or you could look at his historical minutes, right? Like how many minutes did he get last year? Did he have some spike minute games? Things like that. Does this seem low? Does it seem high? What's your gut feeling, right? And if you can identify, you know, a player that should be 1 minute projected less or 1 minute projected more, especially when it's a high fantasy point per minute player, that can be worth, you know, 1 point of projection, right? Either way. And that can make a huge difference in your lineup. So making these changes can be really valuable, right? Let's say with Bjelica, as Jordan just did, we just identified, you know, he's on a new team and you saw Steve Kerr was said something like, we want to play a lot of him. Okay, that's something that our model is not reading that quote. Maybe you just found it in a video or something, but you can then easily just change his projection, and that's going to add quite a bit of value, especially in a 2-game slate. So then let's talk about step two, right? Step two.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Real quick, I want to just note a couple things here on step one. And I think, first of all, with the minutes projection, that's a really strong point. And the idea here, too, is that these players at low salaries, especially on some of the smaller slates, are going to be very fragile to updates to the projection, right? We didn't really have to move Bjelica by very much, and he suddenly becomes one of the most like competitive point per dollar players in this range by literally bumping him up like a point and a quarter, which might represent him playing one additional minute. And the other point I wanted to make just about the minutes projections in general is you can apply a bit of a game theory way of thinking here with the minutes of just thinking, you know, what if these are wrong? If we look at someone like Grayson Allen, if this minutes projection is wrong, it's probably going to be wrong down, right? It's unlikely. I guess we could potentially be wrong and say maybe he's going to play 34 minutes than 30, but we already know he doesn't score a lot of points even with 30 minutes. If we're wrong down and he only plays 20 minutes, he's going to have a serious negative potentially impact on his projection overall and actually ends up not even in our player pool. It's the same deal with Bielitsa here, right? If we are wrong on Bielitsa and if it plays less minutes than we expected, well, he's a low salary. He's a low projected player anyway. He's not going to show up in a bunch of our lineups. But what if he plays 20 minutes, right? That's going to have a huge impact on his projection overall. And we can think about some of that game theory kind of thing here and couple it with our own outside research, like Max mentioned. But, you know, think about what we really stand to gain or lose if we're wrong or right on a particular minutes projection. I was just going to note a couple things here real quickly, because I'm realizing now that there's probably some of you guys that joined us for NBA last year when we were using the older version of the app. And there maybe are some new things here or a few things that are unfamiliar. So since we are focusing so much of our attention here on some of these detailed projections here, it is worth noting that these now do just show up by default. But this is also totally customizable. So you can, if you in particular wanted to do a deep dive into minutes, you can move the minutes column over to projection.
I didn't even know this.
Yeah, you can see it a little bit easier side by side if you want. If you don't need all these other columns, even just for now, you can remove some of these other detailed projection columns. So we really wanted to, especially in a sport where maybe people are going to be diving in a little bit deeper into particular detailed projections like NBA, we wanted to just make this a little bit easier to do and organize the way you want. So a couple new features. There's plenty of other videos that deep dive into all of the new features in the redesign, but a few things that maybe were worth pointing out here. But let's go ahead. We'll jump into step two. I'll let you keep going.
Sorry, it's muted. So step two. So on this step, we're just looking at the build settings that we're going to use to construct our lineups, right? The positive for you is we actually have put in a lot of work backtesting these sliders, and we really have set the defaults to what we've backtested as the most plus EV optimal settings for the type of games you're playing. So we don't think there's a lot of value added by moving these around, but let's just talk about what they do, right? Correlation slider. So correlation is worth noting because it will be as high as moderate in NBA. Well, I don't know what I'm saying. I'm sorry. Let me get it back here. Correlation is important because, you know, in NBA, like the correlations are that strong, but at the same time, it's accounting for that, right? It's just how much are we taking to this into account? We're not manufacturing higher correlation. It's just sort of what range of value do you want to value correlation with, right? And so in two game slates, was the default to zero?
Jordan, it was, yeah. That?
Yeah, so in two game slates, what we're trying to do is we're just trying to optimize for, you know, one range of outcome. And we'll talk about sim variance in a bit. And so that might be not be as high, but for as a main slate, it's probably going to be higher. But again, you know, some people get a little confused here. They're like, well, you know, NBA doesn't have correlation. I shouldn't use correlation, right? Well, NBA has subtle correlations, but and putting that slider to 10 doesn't mean that suddenly we're going to treat it like a baseball game. It just means we're going to value those correlation values more highly for what they are, right? So ownership fade, I think this is a really cool feature that we have because a lot of people, as Jordan has mentioned, they have something where they'll have some rule, right? They'll say, okay, just, you know, include one 5% owned or less play, or, you know, have a cumulative ownership of 150% or less or something like that, 200% or less, right? That's a fine heuristic. That's probably going to help you build better lineups. But a better thing would be to use some sort of algorithmic thing like we do with this ownership fade slider, where it's going to take into account the difference of ownership between the player and the average ownership of their position, and also the variance of those players. And what that's going to do is we're going to basically just algorithmically and automatically make those decisions for you. So you don't need those rules. You're going to get lineups that have a lower cumulative ownership, but are also doing it in a smart way and are playing players that are chalky, that are good plays, and are trying to fade the chalk that are bad plays. So I think it's a really cool thing to do, especially in NBA when might be hard to quantify. Okay, well, this person is going to be used by 80% of the field. Should I use him? Should I not? We're going to help you do that, right? And the last slider is sim variance. So to put this simply, basically the higher the slider is, the smaller the size of these buckets of randomly selected game simulations we're going to use to determine the projections of the player we build for when we build each of your lineups, right? So at 10, what this means is we're just going to take a single game simulation and we're just going to build the optimal lineup for that single game simulation. At 0, this is going to be our full set of game simulations. And that's basically just building on average projections like a normal optimizer. The higher the slider is, the more upside your lineups will have at the expense of average performance. And it's also going to give you a more diverse array of lineups in your pool and probably lower exposure to the player because it's going to basically just going to really optimize for that one game. And single games can have some randomness in them. So we would say your best off just leaving a lot of these build settings alone after you, but you know, pick the contest that you're playing or sort of the contest that most of your entries are in. And we can assure you we've done a lot of the hard work just optimizing these settings, right? So we don't need to worry about setting player group rules or stacking rules here or anything like that. Our correlations are pulled directly from our sim data. So the correlation slider weights that accordingly, right? So this is, you know, I just want to emphasize, this is really big when we're talking about speed and NBA DFS, right? Because it's not uncommon that you kind of have to just completely start over your process of what you're thinking with like 15 minutes before lock. This isn't always going to happen, but it will. And unlike NFL or MLB, where you can sort of just prepare for everything and you have a lot of time, with this, you don't have a lot of time. So if you have a completely new team situation, you'd have to completely figure out what groups to set and change all these things. And, you know, having an extra minute to just like look over the projections of these new players and adjust them a little bit or just trying to really hone in those projections, that's going to be really helpful because then you can make that adjustment that can really change the construction of your lineups. That's going to make your lineups way more plus EV. So Jordan, you want to start building lineups?
Yeah, let's do it. So we'll just build here our lineups looking at maybe a 20 max between 10,000 and 50,000 entrants, a typical contest for an NBA slate. And one of the things that you'll notice here right off the bat that's happening is we're actually building 500 lineups on this build. And the reason why is that when you ask for a particular set of lineups from SaberSim, we're going to build a much larger pool of lineups overall than just the 20 you asked for. So quickly here, I'll make two edits to projections just so we can start seeing our lineups. But the whole idea here is so that you can edit some of your maximum, you edit your exposures overall here in step 3 to dial in the lineups exactly the way you want without us having to build additional lineups to satisfy some of those constraints. If you are using a traditional tool, you may have to run a build and realize, oh, that's too much or too little exposure to some player and go back and adjust the exposure and start all over again. You don't have to do that here. When we set a maximum exposure for a player, and in a couple of minutes, we'll talk about why you might do that. But if we set a maximum exposure for a player, we're going to go through this pool of 500 lineups and look through for our favorite 20 that satisfy the exposure settings you've set here. And the core concept here that I think is just very crucial to get is that this entire pool of lineups is what we feel are viable lineups for the contest. You told us you're playing a GPP that is a 20 entry max that has 10,000 to 50,000 entrants in it. And we said, here are 500 lineups that work, that are probably profitable, that have positive expected value for you to play in these contests. And your exposure setting here is playing within the kind of playground of viable lineups that we've built for you. So,
yeah, I just will add, I mean, basically in summary, you basically can't screw this up.
Yeah,
right?
That's like, well said.
It's pretty safe. The only way you can screw this up is if you make such a crazy adjustment that you get this error message. So maybe you want to do that with James Harden, like try to put him at 5% and see what happens, Jordan.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to do it a lot, but we can do it for a few different players to get it to pull up here. Actually, I'll just do zeros.
Okay.
We'll just scratch off all the studs.
Okay, there we go. So if you're making so many adjustments that suddenly you're getting this sort of error message, which is basically, you know, there's not a lineups in this pool to fulfill what you want to do. If you get that happen, if that happens, it's not necessarily a terrible thing. Like maybe you're going to do this and it's actually what you want to do because there's a particular player that you want to get that we didn't build for you and you just want a few lineups with that player, or you just decided you want to fade this really chalky player and you messed up an ownership projection or something like that. It's not necessarily a terrible thing, but it just means that you're taking a chance because you're sort of disagreeing with the Saberson model. And sometimes you might want to do that. But in general, if you're not as confident or you just want to play on the safe side, the way to ensure that you're not screwing up this process is to never get that error message. And if you do, revert what you just did. So this is really the spot where we recommend people focus on adjustments actually to add value, because it's really easy. And it also allows you to get to make sure you're handling leverage right. Right. So we have this column that's called leverage. And basically that's just the exposure of the player subtracted by the projected ownership of that player. Right. And these are basically what this is going to mean is these are the players that you're going to need to do well for your lineups to be profitable, because you're going to have them more than the field, right? And so on a basic level, what you want to ask is, okay, are we over leveraged or overexposed to certain plays on the slate? Can we get leverage on these plays while reducing our exposure? So, you know, maybe you really liked someone who is a value play and you made a projection adjustment and suddenly you're getting them in 90% of your lineups and we project them at 5% ownership. That might be a situation where you say, okay, I really like this player. I also made it a projection adjustment. And you know what? I don't want that much leverage on this player. If I get him in 50% of my lineups and he outperforms, that's great. That's like you still have huge leverage on the field. So that's something you want to think about. So another thing you might want to do is look at maximum negative leverage, right? And see, okay, who am I basically fading, right? So in this situation, it's like, okay, we're completely fading Russell Westbrook. Are we okay with that? Are we not okay with that? What do we want to make sure we get a little bit of him? He might be a high upside player. This is an unknown situation. He's now on the Lakers. So there's something to think about as well. So in general, maybe, you know, if I'm doing this, I want to make sure that I don't have more than like a certain level of positive leverage to any one player, and maybe adjust that maximum exposure down. And then also try not to have too much negative leverage on another player, unless I have a really strong stance on these players, right? So ultimately, a really easy way and maybe the best thing to do here is just use that leverage column, sort by it, and make sure that those highest leverage player and lowest leverage players actually really represent your favorite and least favorite plays on the slate. And if they don't, maybe look into them more and try to consider what to do there, right?
Yeah, and I'll chime in here quickly too. Again, this is a two-game slate for opening night, so the projected ownerships are all very high because these players are all going to be owned in a bunch of lineups. But this can really get useful too as we start to get into some of the big main slates, 10, 11, 12 game, I mean, even 8-game slates as we get into the regular season, where projected ownerships for players are going to come down and you actually have the ability to get really crazy leverage on plays if you want them. Like right now, I was kind of going through an example as you were talking, Max, of boosting a guy like Carmelo Anthony, who seems to be a little bit of a lower owned play that we're at least somewhat interested in here, and then bringing his exposure down. But like there are legitimately plays that you can get a ton of leverage on or a ton of negative leverage on once the bigger main slates start. And it's just always important. I think one thing I always like to look at as soon as I run the build is there is occasionally a build that you'll run where you'll sort by your leverage here on step 3, and you'll see that you have 75 percentage points of leverage to one player, and the next closest player is 25 or 30 points of leverage. And those are the kind of situations where, you know, you should ask yourself, is this player that I have 75 percentage points of leverage on my favorite play on the entire slate by a ton, by two times the percentage as the next highest leverage player? And if that's the case, great. But if it isn't, you can pull down that maximum exposure, still get positive leverage to that player. We could do it here with LeBron, just for example, and still have leverage over the field on the player without it being this dramatically overexposed player, or not necessarily overexposed, but dramatically over leveraged player compared to the rest of your lineup. So,
yeah. And it's something to think about as well. It's just like, you know, is a player chalky because there's a really good play? Or a lot of times on these two game slates, it's sort of like, there's just no one else. And when that's the case, sometimes those are the players where you might want to cap their max exposure or look for other options, because there might actually be some hidden other options that people just are not thinking about.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the other points we talked about before here too is, you know, keeping an eye on where value is opening up and what that means for roster constructions overall. You know, again, with a two game slate, a little bit difficult to give an example, but let's just say that for whatever reason, some value, some serious value opens up at the center positions or the forward positions on this slate. And we know that people are going to get pressed into moving or using players like Harden and Steph Curry, where they can use up salary at the guard positions and then build lineup constructions that have the good point per dollar plays at the forward spots and the center spots, right? That might make a player like LeBron James, again here, a bit of an opportunity. If a lot of ownership is going to be going to these guard spots, we see that, you know, there's a difference in projection here, that, you know, Harden's a bit higher projected than LeBron, and Curry's about equally projected to LeBron. But if purely from a roster construction standpoint, these guard players are going to gain a lot more ownership, that's a position where I actually like to have this kind of positive leverage to the play that I think people just aren't going to get to because it doesn't fit into their lineup. So again, we already have a lot of LeBron here in this particular example, but the way you would accomplish doing that, or one of the ways you could accomplish doing that, would just be setting a minimum exposure to make sure that you have a certain amount of exposure to him in your lineups. I mean, maybe, I don't know, for a two game slate, maybe you lock him in and increase your exposure that way. But that's just something I like to look at a lot here, and something that is a little bit more unique to NBA for me.
I think our lineups look pretty good. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they do. We didn't make a ton of changes here. Again, just a two-game slate, but some good examples of how you might go about that. So I think the next step here is to get our lineups into contests. And for that, we are going to use the entry editor. So we have a full video on the entry editor that Max and I also recorded here. I think that one's about 45 minutes long. A much deeper dive into all of the features here. But I just want to show you how quickly and how easily we can get these lineups that we just made into our contest with just a few clicks without opening a single CSV spreadsheet. So the first thing I'm going to do here, I have some contests that I've reserved as of this morning for opening night. So I'm just going to click download template file from DraftKings. It's going to immediately go to the right place on DraftKings and start saving my file. And there's my entries file for tonight. I can literally just drag and drop it in here, and it will load all of my entries for the opening night slate. And I have 49 at the moment. So we'll go back here real quickly to the build and just make sure that I've actually got 49 lineups. So you can edit this here at any time too. We don't have to do a new build or anything like that because we want 49 now instead of 20. We'll just go ahead and update this. It'll give us the best 49 of our pool of 500. We'll click save here. Another feature too, I think I should just note this because this comes up all the time and I don't think people know this here. I can rename this. So this is a little bit confusing. Maybe if you have a bunch of different builds, I can rename this and say, this is Max and Jordan's
killer lineups.
Killer lineups. Yeah. So now we know you can rename your lineups here. I think this is just useful to call it. You can rename your lineups, and you can also rename your builds, and they can be different. So this can be Jordan and Max's killer build. And Now we've got two different names, right? Just keeping everything kind of however organized you want. But we'll just go ahead and jump back to the entry editor here. Again, like I mentioned at the start of the stream, always filling everything with a unique lineup into every contest. So we're going to use the unique fill method. Apply it. And literally just a couple clicks here, download all entries, download and open DraftKings. It's going to download my file, take us right to the right page on DK here to get these things uploaded. And we are good to go. So I know I was kind of talking and narrating through this, but if you were doing this by yourself, literally just a few seconds of time, so much easier. Again, in a sport where speed is everything, right? Man, it is terrifying to be trying to load 150 lineups from a CSV file to another CSV file and get it into the right site when you literally only had a few minutes to account for breaking news. And there's probably, I mean, Max, I don't know what you think, but I think the entry editor in particular, it was like, built for NBA. It is so nice for a sport where stuff is changing right up until lock.
Yeah, and I highly recommend you watching our entry editor video, going into more detail, because there's a lot of features here, and Jordan actually just beautifully summarized many of them, but there's a lot of different ways you can use this, and it's a really valuable feature. So definitely learn how to use it, because it's going to be very helpful and can add a lot of value.
Yeah, and I mean, the last thing to note here is late swap also does live in this entry editor part of the app. And again, next week we'll be doing a deeper dive into how to use the swap tools, both quick swap and late swap for NBA successfully. So we'll go ahead. I'm going to pull up a bit of a summary here, and we'll wrap this up. I see there are, before I jump into that, there have been a few questions that have rolled in. So we'll answer questions here in a moment. But if you have any questions about anything that Max and I talked about here on stream today, go ahead and fire them off into the YouTube chat or into the Office Hours channel in Slack. And let me go ahead and just bring up this last slide here. And this is just kind of our summary. We like doing these cheat sheets to summarize everything that you kind of need to know from the video. So NBA cheat sheet, right? Number one, accurate projections are crucial. NBA is a lower variance sport, and projections are more predictive of success in NBA. So having a model like SaberSim that projects games accurately is just huge. But also, speed matters. News breaks quickly and all the time, early and often, and late and often in NBA. And failing to adjust to this news is just negative EV. You're going to build less profitable lineups if you are not reacting to news when it is breaking up until lock and after lock, which we'll mention here in a second. The third rule, or the third key here, is to build lineups with upside. You want to build lineups that are correlated, and in NBA in particular, avoiding negative correlations. You want to play the good chalk and fade the bad chalk and have a way of identifying what those chalk players are and which players fit into each bucket, but also to play players and lineups overall that have ceiling and reach their ceilings often and are actually thinking about the individual ranges of outcomes of certain players. Finally, the last one is late swap. I mentioned the news does not stop breaking at lock. You need to update your lineups throughout the slate, and we'll have more to come on late swap strategy. You do not have to take my word for any of this or take me and Max's word for any of this. We have a free 7-day trial, so you can come check this out before you pay a dime. You will get complete access to everything if you sign up for the 7-day trial. So if this video got you as excited as it did for me for the start of NBA season, you could sign up for a 7-day trial today, play the Thursday night game for football tonight, play the Sunday main slate, and be ready to tip off the NBA season next week before you've had to pay a penny. We've got access to all of our sports included in this free 7-day trial. You can go over to sabersim.com, press the big green button that says start my trial, and get started from there. So let's go ahead and we can jump right into questions here. Let me go ahead and see here. So we had a question earlier here that says, what kind of cumulative ownership ranges do you think make sense for NBA DFS? And I think, Max, you hinted at something like this question earlier.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is, you know, there's a reason people think about this, right? Is it's a good heuristic, is to think about, okay, like how much cumulative ownership am I going to get into my lineup? How much is the max that makes sense? We feel like our ownership slider and the way we build lineups considering ownership is a more optimal way of doing this. And So actually, the thing is I don't think about this. So I actually don't even know what the answer is. I think in general, a rule of thumb is cumulative ownership matters a little less than just having some sort of low ownership play, because what matters is how unique your lineup is to the field. And if you get a 2% ownership play, that's going to make a big difference in that. So having a low ownership play in your lineup is probably going to be helpful. But again, I think our slider does a really good job with this. It incorporates into the actual way we build your lineups, and you don't have to worry about it as much.
Yeah, no, I mean, the fact that it's just hard to come up with a good number off the top of your head is indicative of really how poor of a heuristic that is. A big reason why is because NBA, like baseball, has totally variable slate sizes, right? So, I mean, you'd have to come up with some kind of rule that accounted for how many different players are in the pool and how many games are on the slate. And it just becomes a mess really quickly of keeping track of all of that. Right. So
the number on the 19th in a 2-game slate is going to be way, way different than the slate the next day. So
yeah, absolutely. Yep. Cool. So another question, this was from Ryan, and he said, how does the new multi-positional eligibility impact the FanDuel NBA product?
So it's actually unclear whether they're going to keep this. So it is on night one, but apparently they have switched this back. So it's not clear if they're going to actually do this for the whole season. So I'll start with that. Second thing is I haven't thought about it. And again, if you have a lineup builder, basically any lineup builder is probably going to account for this in a way, because it's just going to try to build lineups in the way you want. But that flexibility is going to make it so it's easier to make lineup with the best value plays. So I'm assuming that a lot of the value plays are going to be chalkier and get more ownership. So it's going to actually probably be more important to find these low end plays that might go under the radar.
Yeah. And the other thing I'll note too is it will create a little bit more of an importance of having accurate projections and identifying what the best plays are on a slate, because you can play more players in more positions. So figuring out, you know, there's a big difference between a player like LeBron James having just small forward eligibility on FanDuel to maybe, I don't know what his eligibility is right now, but if he has guard and forward eligibility, right? If he's an elite play and the value is at the forward position, you have a lot more lineup flexibility playing him at guard, right? And vice versa. And those kinds of combinations of players were not possible last year. And it increases the importance of identifying what the best plays are by having accurate projections. So let's see, I had another question here from Aaron. He said, when building your initial build, let's say I'm entering a GPP contest, a single entry of 8K people or so, 150 lineups, when lineups are finished loading, why does lineups always say 3? Honestly, Aaron, I think maybe this one sounds a little bit like you might be seeing a bug or something on your end. I think what would be most helpful is if you want to either shoot us an email, support@sabersim.com, or pop a message into the support channel in chat, especially if you can show a screenshot of what you're looking at. This sounds like maybe something is a little bit goofed up in your settings, or maybe could be a small visual bug that we can get ironed out.
I think there's a couple questions in Slack as well.
Yes, there sure are. Let's get this one up here. We talked a lot about this one here, but this one says, where does Max stand on correlation in basketball? Max, do you have a correlation stance?
I mean, it's important. I think it's sneaky. I think it's kind of funny to deal with. But, you know, I think we touched on this earlier in the video, which is basically like, correlation is smaller in NBA, but if you handle it well, it kind of can be more of an edge than you might get in baseball if you're playing in a field where everyone's stacking anyway. Because in baseball, there's not that much difference. So it's sort of like if someone stacks, they're basically getting away with it. But in NBA, you know, if you have a situation where there's some sort of correlation that someone just is not taking into account because they're like, it's NBA, it doesn't really matter that much, then that can be really helpful. And a lot of people, the only way they handle correlation is game stacking. And sometimes that's just not that valuable. So I think it's important. They're they're definitely certainly small, but a lot of times negative correlation is going to be a lot more important when you're playing two players that play the same position and might, you know, take minutes away from each other. That's going to be a little more important than trying to find positive correlations.
Yeah, that's well said. And if you click on players too, you'll see that like players typically have more negative correlations to other players in the game than they do have those positive correlations. So that's a lot of what the builder's doing when it's factoring in correlation at all, is avoiding some of those stronger negative correlations. The only other point I'll add on there too is like the field, if they're thinking about correlations in basketball, is almost certainly doing it the wrong way and is doing it in just a really blunt force type way, where maybe you're setting player group rules to disallow two studs from the same team showing up. But there are obviously, even if those correlations are negative there, they're minor, and there are so many game scripts and game outcomes where both of those players are successful. Like, it is not very hard for me to come up with a game script outcome where both LeBron James and Anthony Davis have good games, right? Maybe the game is higher scoring than the total indicates, or the game goes to overtime, or there's a ton of different ways why that outcome could happen. And the field, at best, is just going to be using like player groups and rules of thumbs to deal with this. Like, I think, again, even though correlations between players are smaller in basketball, and even our correlation slider is going to be lower in basketball, it's a really nice edge, and it gives a lot of relative value because you know it's going to be handled the right way here. So just kind of my thoughts on it. But I know looks like GR here was a little bit more interested in hearing from you, Max. I'll go ahead and jump to the last question. Guys, if you have any other questions here before we wrap up, fire them off now. But this last question here, is it worth trimming a player pool down pre-build, like only including guys playing more than 24 projected minutes, or do a research build first and adjust exposures there? I'm going to jump in on this question first here. And I would say, I actually think it is always best to do your research or test builds first, and just have that background to work from when you go back to step one. We kind of glossed over that a little bit in the actual stream, just because, you know, we're starting from step one. But in reality, when you're going through your process, and what I actually do, I always like to do just one build a ton of lineups, 1500 lineups, and just get an idea of what the slate looks like, and then go back and start messing around with things. I mean, some of that is just a time thing. Like, you can spend a ton of time dialing into the minutes projections of every single player on the slate for a 12 game slate, but you're probably better off figuring out, what are the value plays that I'm getting anyway? Who's showing up in the lineups? And let me direct my attention to those particular plays and add a little more value on things that are actually going to have an impact. So
I would also like to say something, which is, I think that's actually probably the worst thing that you could do in terms of trying to trim. I would say we were talking earlier, and I think trimming by 99th percentile projection might be an interesting thing to do. The thing is with trimming by minutes is sometimes the players that you want, especially these guys who are like backup centers or big men, can be really high output players, and they might not be projected at more than 20 minutes. And those are sometimes the players you want in your lineup. So I don't think trimming by projected minutes makes as much sense as maybe trimming by something like 95th or 99th percentile projections. I think that can make a lot more sense and is more useful.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Cool. I don't see any other questions here. Thank you everybody for tuning into the stream. I hope, you know, at the end of this stream that you can see now that to beat NBA DFS here in 2021, not only do you need the most accurate projections available, but you need a powerful lineup tool, lineup optimizer like SaberSim that can build you lineups built for upside by managing all these complicated NBA correlations, dealing with ownership correctly, and leveraging a player's full range of outcomes to build these lineups that can take down the biggest GPPs, and better yet, do it all very quickly. SaberSim can do all of this and then be ready again when you need to late swap 10 minutes after lock. So again, don't have to take our words for it. Check out the free 7-day trial. We will be back here again, or at least I will be back here again tomorrow, talking a little bit about NBA showdowns. The next week or so will be packed full of a bunch of NBA content. So stay tuned. If you have any questions about NBA strategy as you're gearing up for the start of the season, always feel free to email us at support@sabersim.com. Max, thanks for joining me here on stream today. And looking forward to the start of NBA.
See ya.
See ya.